On this week's episode of That Sound Podcast, we have local drummer Jason Christie, who plays with the amazing Words That Burn.
Yeah, they have some amazing music, and it's great to have local musicians on here at such a high caliber of musician. I really only recently, to be honest, in the last maybe year, got into their music, and man, I fucking love it.
It's absolutely class. Yeah. The work that the guys have put in, the professionalism, you know, the standard of their tracks.
Definitely, definitely.
With every project, you can see the growth.
Yeah, you're going to enjoy this one. Strap yourself in.
Enjoy. On this week's episode of That Sound Podcast, we have the drummer from Words That Burn, Jason Christie. Jason, very welcome to the show. Delighted to have you here in HQ.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for coming on.
Anytime.
So, you've been busy the last week or two there, Jason. I seen you were down in Cork there at the festival.
Yeah, down in Cork to celebrate our 1 year release of our latest album, Crow Culture. It's out a year now, so no better place than Cork to go down and have a bit of a bash, you know, a Paddy's Weekend bash.
Yes.
It was a lively one.
Good metal scene down there.
Amazing metal scene, yeah. It's always one of our favourite places to go. It's you're always in for a good show or a good time, at least.
Yeah. You were saying that the college is banging out like musicians. Like, there just seems to be a lot of flow coming out of there at the minute.
Yeah, every time I go down, there's some, you know, young group of kids coming out of college and, you know, all in different renditions of bands and different members together. But yeah, it's some amazing bands like God Alone is a big standout one, or Red Sun Alert. You know, every time I go see them, they're so above and beyond, you know, what you'd expect at their age and stuff. But
I think Ireland, in fairness, at the minute, seems to be thriving in every direction. There seems to be bands popping up from everywhere, especially in the Cork region, maybe Limerick. You know, obviously Dublin, yourselves, just, I don't know, what do you think, Luke?
I definitely think you're on to something there, Gavin. There's a lot of young bands coming back again. As you said, hard rock and metal's coming back.
Yeah, definitely.
Coming back big time, and it's great to see.
And there is a mix, and a lot of original music, which is good to see, you know, like yourselves, obviously. Like, you know, I remember like maybe 10 years ago, any band you see is just all cover. You
know? Yeah.
You really had to dig deep to find original stuff.
To find original stuff, it was harder to maybe get gigs. I found, anyway, personally, when I was trying to play that original scene around 2016, 2017, and having played some really nice original gigs, then some of them would be few and far between, but maybe that was partly our own fault for not being fit to source them. But you guys have done a fabulous job, Jason, with sourcing original gigs over the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, I definitely when I started out on the gig scene, it was you played mostly covers and then you dotted in one or two of your own tunes.
Yeah,
you
know, bleeded in like.
Yeah, and but it was rare you'd have a band doing, you know, full original sets. And with Words That Burn, we always hint at the fact of maybe, you know, doing a cover here and there. Sometimes we end the set with a cover of like Deftones or stuff like that. You know, you have to do it now and then, but we were always adamant on like, let's play our tunes. Because we were always writing new songs, working on new stuff, and we're just excited to see how it went live, you know, experiment with it. And but it's been amazing to do your own stuff all the time, you know. The when you get to see a response of your own tunes,
it's gotta be an awesome feeling.
It's the best feeling in the world, you know.
Yeah, it's gotta be. And was it Tolls? You'd done a lot of stuff in, wasn't it, in Dundalk?
Tolls, yeah. We played what, 2 or 3 shows there now. We played there this year anyway. And they've kind of renovated the venue now, so it's an amazing gig venue. They have, I think it's called Lollapalooza. It's like a festival. Last year it was to help save our homeless charity festival.
And
we got the headline one of the nights there. Tolls is a great free venue. Back when I started gigging, like the Spirit Store was the big spot to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit harder to play, it seems, nowadays, but it's great to see a smaller venue in town that's more accessible for local bands. We played there and there was acoustic acts opening up, there was cover bands, you know, there was rappers and stuff, and then
it's
us playing
see,
metal,
like,
you know, it's such a mixture, and it's acceptable in a place like that, you know.
Tolls are an absolutely brilliant venue for giving everyone a chance.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I think is fabulous. Anyone who has an interest in music or wants to showcase their talent will be given the opportunity to do so in Tolls.
Yeah, yeah. We need venues like that. You know, that's how you give the bands a chance. That's without those venues, the bands would be nothing, you know, especially ones who want to try something original or at least, you know, cut their teeth in what it's like to play live, you know.
Yeah.
We really appreciate places like that, you know.
Do you remember some of the bars or clubs that you played your original stuff first?
Yeah, I got to start my first ever show was in Carrickmacross with Words of Burn. We our first ever single, it's a long time back now, we shot the video in the dugout. We played a gig in the dugout, and that was the first, you know, time playing the original stuff there. And then my second ever gig was up in Fibbers, and Fibbers became like the, you know, that's the spot in Dublin that you want to play as an up and coming band. And upstairs, downstairs, with the Metal to the Masses, you know, just getting in there with all the band scenes. And a lot of Dublin shows early in the days was the Gypsy Rose, used to be an amazing venue. It's not open anymore. And there was On the Rocks as well, was a great venue, you know, for metal gigs. And then, you know, starting going into places like Limerick, playing Dolan's for Siege of Limerick, or the Bad Reputation gigs, you know. The metal scene down there is very good. And then Cork and Galway, you know, we started branching out and trying to find all these spots. A couple of good venues have come and gone, you know, over the years, unfortunately. But the ones like Fibbers, nowadays the Grand Social's amazing. There's places popping up everywhere now. I'm seeing bands trying to put on shows. So.
Yeah. So it all kicked off then in 2016 with your first album, And it done very well. In the charts, in the iTunes charts in Ireland, number one.
It was a crazy experience. So I just came out of doing the Leaving Cert. We got signed to a record label at the time for that album, Wormhole Death. They were an Italian label. And they brought us out to Italy to an amazing studio. We recorded our first album, spending a month in Italy as an 18-year-old, you know, recording an album in this, you know, phenomenal studio and playing this amazing drum kit and all this sort of stuff. It was like, it was my first step into like being an actual musician, you know, and I learned so much from that because you don't know enough when you go in as a youngster and you haven't done, you know.
Only out of school.
And this is like, I didn't know how to record, and this guy showed me how to play the clicks and, you know, all this sort of stuff and what's better for the song. And we just started really taking off from there with, we got signed, we got back, we started getting shows, people started to like our music, and it's definitely with that album we found our sound. You know, we had this, you know, we've all such different music tastes. We're not all just metalheads, you know. Okay. We like like instrumental music, like God is an Astronaut. You know, we like, you know, dance music, you know, anything that's good music. Yeah, we liked it. And so I find our songs are a good mixture of stuff.
Definitely, yeah, I was going to say that.
But we present it as a heavy metal sort of, you know, band. Definitely that energy. And so that was the big learning experience, and we came back and it went down so well. Like it got into the charts, and you know, it was amazing seeing it sitting up there with, like, you know, Metallica had stuff up in the charts, and there was
Hardwired would have come out in 2016.
And there was like a Bruce Springsteen album, I think, was up in the charts too, and seeing it sitting up above those, albeit for, you know, a couple of hours or a few days.
Still, number one, you got the fucking number one spot.
And how did that label find you guys?
It's just, I think we kind of found each other at the time. You know, you're looking around when you're, especially in those days, you're just trying to find who's in there. Feel that can help us expand what we do. Like you want to play shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want your songs to get out there. And it's like, at that point we were very young. We didn't know how to do it per se, you know. We could play shows, we could write the songs, but it's like we needed that next step. So just kind of reaching out, we ended up in conversations with them and we made a deal, and we did that for that first album cycle. And we learned so much from that. And
amazing experience. Like.
Amazing opportunities. Like we got, we played a show in all around Europe with another label mate band, you know, so we played dates all from like Poland to Czech Republic, you know, all over Budapest, you know, Everton, and it was a crazy experience being just in a van on the road for 10, 15
living
hours a day.
Like,
and,
you know,
it was so mind opening. So getting the experience of the recording studio, then the road experience, and how to kind of deal with it professionally. And then, you know, so we brought that experience kind of into our second album, but we went independent then.
Yeah.
So because I found we knew the tools, how to do it on our own, and with, you know, modern tech, you know, social media on everything online, you know.
It's so important now, like, it really is, isn't it?
You can really do a lot yourself. So we took that on for the second album, and we kind of had the same success again.
You had the two singles, isn't it, from the second album?
Yeah, Rise, I think, was the first single.
And Riptide, wasn't it?
Yeah, Riptide.
Yeah, Riptide's
a
banger.
Song,
To this day, Riptide's been the tune that's just, you know, always stood out. I think it is
the most streams on Spotify, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 60,000+, I think, at this point, you know. Yeah.
But the sound of it, like you said, you can see by listening, or see, you can hear by listening to that song, your different influences between the synthesizers, and almost like the vocals is almost like, I won't say indie, but like, there is a lot going on. I feel there is anyway. I don't know if you feel it, Luke.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. I sometimes feel a lot of that, like, Deftones influence from time in the guitar playing, or those like real heavy smacking riffs, and then yourself locking in with that rhythm section is just like bulletproof, and those kick drums come through, man, you're just like so locked in.
Yeah, like Deftones is probably a good example. Like we because we have a lot of influence, we don't want to sound like something that's already been done, you know. Obviously there's parts of it that sound like other bands, we're obviously taking influence from places, but like Deftones, Bring Me the Horizon, and, you know, even, you know, Slipknot, stuff like that. It's like we do it, you know, we have metal tunes, but we also do stuff like, you might say, indie, but, you know, it could be poppy style.
It almost reminds me of that, like, college rock, you know, that? Like,
So
that chorus from Riptide reminds me of, like, an American skater boy kind of lyric.
Yeah, like, with that one, we if the lads hear this, we went into it with the kind of idea of being, like, festival rock, you know, or festival metal, you know, something that gets people pumped and up, like, and going.
It's
a
journey. That song is a journey. It's up and down.
And like, you have to take influences from like pop tunes where they know how to write a catchy chorus. Even if it's metal, it's got to have some sort of catchy hook, and we're very adamant on that. And it's the same with the synth and the vocals, you know.
I suppose that's the whole writing process. Now you have to think of these things, you know, you have to think of your festival, think of the crowd, think of them singing back to you. Like, there's so much involved. When you are recording the lyrics and such, who's have you much influence in the lyric writing, or...?
No, you wouldn't want a drummer anywhere near the lyrics. Right. The singer, Ronan, he's a phenomenal lyricist. He's like, he is just... He's the best lyricist I know.
Okay.
And, you know, it's such a privilege to be, like, in a band. Same with all the guys. They're all the best at what they do.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about being in the band. It's like, everybody is amazing what they do, and when we can pull it all together.
Everyone knows the station.
Yeah, and it's just like Shane and Ronan would be the main songwriters, and... It's just like they'll start the initial ideas, and Shane will write drums and, you know, program drums, and he'll bring it to me, and we'll hash that out, and we'll progress it a bit more. And he's always trying to challenge me. And like, it's amazing having someone like Shane, because he knows how I think as a drummer now at this point, and he can send me a demo where it's just like, oh, I don't know if I can play that sort of stuff, but then I get into it and I can, and I've progressed something, and then I'm like, well, what if we add this? And he's just like, that brings forward him. And that's kind of how we all approach it.
So it bounces off each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like when the he gets a melody or a bit of a song going, the singer is already starting to write his hooks, and we do go through a lot of variations of songs, because it's worth spending the time to find the best bit for all the songs. So, but yeah, by the time we all come together in the end, it's very, you know, pleasing, you know, everybody's great at what they do. So
That's cool. And then you went 2021, then you played Bloodstock.
Yeah, so after the dreaded lockdowns and all that, we flew over to play Bloodstock, and it was so surreal, because at home, you know, you couldn't go anything but a few kilometers without it, and you're all masked up, and suddenly I walk into a field of like 30,000 people jumping up to Skindred, and it was just like, you know, in those year or two without, you know, music was horrible for everybody. I think that as a musician, you know, you can do all the stuff at home.
It's not the same.
It's nothing like getting out with your pals and, you know, rocking out. And
especially when COVID, for me anyway, I found was a very creative time, which nearly drove me more demented to want that human connection with the musicians that you're like, man, I have so many ideas. Like, I need to sit in a studio with someone. Or
and then when it was all over, I felt then, like, going into big crowds and stuff, you were kind of freaking out.
You were apprehensive,
It was very surreal walking into Bloodstock after
I'd say
all that.
That was like a mind fuck audio.
It took a while to get used to it, but the joy of seeing everybody going, especially when Skindred was just playing as we walked in, it was, you know, it was just like, oh, this is what we've been needing all along, you know. And, such an amazing way to get back into things, you know. We... by the time we got back home, things weren't still open and there was no gigs happening here. And we're like, but you could see there was hope for it was coming back, you know.
But it must have been a great experience.
Amazing, yeah. I got to be in the backstage areas with some of my favourite musicians, you know. I'm not one for going up to them too much, you know. There was a couple of people I wish I did go up to, you know. But it was amazing. The crew that run the stages, they're the nicest people in the world. Like, they want to make sure you have a good time. And for them to even ask us to play, like, we'd actually been asked to play the year before when the lockdown happened.
You couldn't,
And we thought, you know, we're definitely going to get axed. You know, we're a small band on the bill. Whenever it comes back, it's like, we're not going to be a priority. And they still asked us back the next year and even upgraded our stage and stuff for us. And,
that's nice.
It was amazing for us because we were just coming into, we recorded this during the lockdown, our album. And that was our first time getting to, like, we're like, oh, we have a big gig, we can release a song. So we released Den of Lions as the first single, and we went and played this, and it was just like, oh, the music life is back, you know. The momentum was going, and that just set it all off again for us. We got a great run of shows from that, and it started our album cycle off the best way possible, you know.
You played with Alien Weaponry as well from New Zealand. That was the year before, I think, was it?
That was 2019-ish.
Oh, 2 years before,
before lockdown.
I could be wrong, I'm bad with dates. But
they were a great band,
They were phenomenal. So talented, and for, you know, they were in the middle of their equivalent of the Leaving Cert to be doing a tour around the world, and just seeing them explode after that. And they were lovely people too, you know. Just some great guys out rocking that were mates, you know. Yeah. And the music was amazing.
They're making good strides now at the minute. Like, they're starting to...
Yeah, they're going to be a staple for, like, following a big band, you know. Yeah. They're going to be getting those slots. Like, as soon as they had that first single that got big, every festival had them, you know. Yeah. And then they had a European tour, American tour, you know. It was amazing to see them taking off. And
supporting Gojira as well.
Yeah. Like, and it's
that,
like,
was incredible.
Yeah. Getting to do that, it was us Dead Label and Alien Weaponry that night.
That's sick.
So it was such a good night, and that was their Pyres album cycle at that time.
Yeah.
So it was just like, we actually, that gig got us so many fans as well. Like, we still get people talking to us to this day about that show. You know, a lot of people found us that night.
Right.
Because I don't think we're the typical matchup for a band like that. You know, we're very different, but at the same time, it went down perfect for us. And after that, then we got the support for Beartooth, came off the back of that pretty much.
Nice.
And that was another, you know, our first time going into the academy. We played some decent shows abroad with festivals and stuff, but getting the big shows at home is always a tough thing.
What was it like in the academy?
The first time, scary. Because that's where I've been going since I was like 14, 15 to see all the bands I loved, you know. That's where the metal bands came true.
Yes. And
It was very surreal to be the other side of the barrier and get your pass to go into the back. And, you know, first time going up on stage and sound check, and it's just like, oh, this is where a lot of people I idolize have been, you know.
Mm.
For me, that was huge. And like, playing with Beartooth was, you know, it was big exposure to a lot of people that maybe didn't see us in Ireland that were metalheads or would like our type of music. So gigs like that did so much for us. And so that was the first time we played the Academy. And then we got asked back again for As I Lay Dying. It was 2 years later or so, I can't remember.
Yeah. 2021.
Yeah. And that for me was one of the best feeling Irish gigs I've ever done. Because like, As I Lay Dying, when I was going to school as a teen, I was listening to that drummer killing it, playing double bass rhythms, you know, the fast, heavy riffs, and, you know, just the speed and energy of that stuff. Yeah. And I remember seeing the poster for the gig and it's like, what if I could play that show? You know, it's like, I played the Academy already.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you getting close to, you know, the people you love and the musicians that inspired you, you know. So when I got to play that one, I was so ready for it. You know, yeah. I'd been on that stage, so I wasn't nervous.
I know what you mean. You got the one out of the way that you were prepared. You were,
So that time I got to go in and enjoy it. And it was a sold out show. It was their first time playing Ireland. And the room was packed for us, and the crowd, you know, there was so many people there that liked us and were cheering us on, and that one was surreal, you know.
That's a common story, actually.
Yeah, that's something we're starting to hear a lot of.
A lot of people that have,
you know, visions from an early age when you set your sights on something or you have that influence.
Definitely been like 3 or 4 people already.
Yeah, have 100% sort of set that goal.
Yeah,
and they strive toward it, and they've made it happen.
I think visualizing what you want to do is so important. Like, you have to always work towards it, even if you're not going to get it. If you're working towards it and you're putting yourself on that route, it's like there is going to be a time where an opportunity comes up and you can say yes because you've been prepared, and you know. And it's all about, you need to see yourself doing that, and it does get you there. Obviously, hard work, practice, putting in the hours of playing little shows or. You know, playing bad shows to nobody, or you know, but it is so much about visualizing
it. Yeah.
The amount of things I've, you know, when I left school, all I wanted to do was, you know, if that dream of being on a record label and doing a tour,
and it happened
straight away, and I was just like, well, you know, maybe this can happen, you know,
but it's just like you said, Jason, with all of those things, when preparation and opportunity.
Yeah,
are combined, people call it luck.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, exactly.
And coming back to that, you visualizing those things as a teen, you saying, listen to the drummer from As I Lay Dying with those double bass riffs, 14, 15, 16, heading into school. And then you find yourself in a studio living in Italy for a month recording a massive album, one of your first studio experiences. For an absolutely huge album that you killed, by the way, it was incredible drumming on
definitely.
It's crazy to think back on it.
Go and play with them, like, you know. It's
mad to think back because, you know, it feels like yesterday playing little local shows with your mates in pubs, and like we still play it. Like we're still playing some nice small local shows, and I love those as much as the big ones. But it's such a all the hard work pays off eventually, you know, with those things. If when that happens, it's just like, okay, I haven't been grinding out on my drum kit for years for nothing, you know. It's just like, it does pay off. And I honestly see it as hard work. Anybody that's determined has a vision for where they can go, they're going to get there if they keep putting in the time to it, you know.
If
you have a goal and you're striving and you're working toward it, you're going to get there once you put in the right amount of effort.
Maybe a little bit of luck involved, but definitely, like you said, you know, people see it as luck, but it is just preparation and timing, you know.
Once you're ready to absolutely kill it, and you took the opportunity with both hands and smashed it, man.
The newest album then, Cutthroat Culture, that is a fucking sick album.
Thank you.
Boy.
It is class, man, I swear to God. I've been listening to it all week. Like, I don't even know where to start. It's
the double bass rhythms for one.
Like,
it's a heavy hitter.
It is. There's so many heavy hitters in that. Play God, the Calvary song. Calvary's coming.
Calvary ain't coming.
Ain't coming.
Yeah. Tongue twister.
Play God.
Play God.
Play God's personally, but double bass wise, one of my favorites. The breakdown is just it's such a you know,
fast,
aggressive, fast rhythm. You know, I love that. I love that song.
It's a really damn good album. Really, really damn good. And if anyone hasn't heard it, check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Out a year now. This last few weeks, out a year, which is crazy. Because we've been, since Bloodstock, we've been promoting it. Like, we had the album recorded during lockdown, and obviously when Bloodstock came up, we were like, we got to come back to the scene with something new. And so we dropped the song from it, and now it's 2024, and we've, you know, we have a music video came out this year for it as well. Because the album, I think it's 10 singles, but put together in a very nice album, you know. We wanted every song to be strong. We don't believe in filler songs, you know. If we love albums, a lot of people have moved away from albums. Maybe it's a smart thing to do in some sense, but I think you gotta, nowadays you have to utilize all the content you have. There's no point putting out 10 songs and not, you know,
yeah,
it's like all those songs, if they're strong enough, they should be given the light and the time to show, because people will miss them if you just put out one or two singles. So we spent a long time trying to make sure this album came across right, that people could hear everything, because if you pick one song, it might maybe put you off what we are, but if you listen to the next song, it could be for you, you know.
So we were saying earlier about the different styles, like you can definitely see it in that album as well.
It definitely, yeah, like, which song? Fire Will, I think was the third music video we did off it. And there's like trap elements in that, and that's something I've never had, you know, in her song before. It's a really heavy, weird song, but then there's like a trappy verse with the hi-hat, you know, fast rhythms and... then like the Cavro Ain't Coming, it ends on like a real like anthem-y, yeah. I'm playing the snare,
it's
and everybody's singing
anthem-y.
Along.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
definitely.
So like, but like I said, we've such mixed music taste that we like to appease all of our music taste, but we want to make something that's kind of can appease a lot of people too.
Definitely,
you know?
There's a lot of pieces to it, but it makes a pie. No, it's a really damn good album.
And it's a tasty pie at that. yeah. And if you haven't heard it or you haven't got a piece of it yet, go get a taste of it.
Go get a piece of that pie.
Yeah, damn right. Go get a piece of that pie.
I got to say, what we lucked out on the producer too. One of my favorite producers, Josh Schroeder. I'd be a huge fan of bands like King A10. For years, I've been listening to them, and I always loved how the production was put together, because it's not just songs; it's almost like a theatrical experience.
Definitely,
The portraying the mood of the song with the production. You know, you can really feel like you're in the songs. And with Josh, he was such an amazing guy to work with. Like, he got what we wanted to do, and the knowledge he was giving us with the songs. You know, what's always best for the song, and that's something you learn the more you work with these amazing producers, just like always what's best for the song. And like, he's a drummer himself, so like everything he went through was with it like a fine tooth comb. And because, like, you know, he would reference stuff, or like we were talking snare drums for days, you know. It's and I think he just, what we had, he was the perfect person to knit it all together, make it make sense, because it was a bit, you know, different in places, and he made it all tied together production wise so a big shout out to him, you know.
Shout out to Josh
For
a fabulous album sound.
Yeah,
and that was something myself and Gavin talked about recently when we spoke about the album. The first thing you had mentioned to me was like, man, the fucking drums.
Yeah, the drums, man.
Drum sound,
huge.
The sound is just
It's explosive.
You can't get away without having a sick drum sound these days. There's two, like, I think for a good few years there was kind of a standard drum sound that a lot of bands had, and now you have to have that unique thing that sets you out, like the snare drum, like, you know, Sleep Token recently, I've been listening to a lot. His snare tone and his cymbal tone is just that bit different to all the other drummers in the metal scene, and it stands out that bit more, you know, like the importance of like the sound of your snare, you know.
Saint Anger.
Yeah, like
love it or hate it. Love it or hate it. It's unique.
I love it. So that's I love that album so much. Yeah, like Metallica for me can do no wrong. But Saint Anger, that album came out.
Something wrong with my speaker.
Oh man. I loved Saint Anger.
Yeah, I never noticed, this coming from as a drummer, I never noticed the snare tone until people pointed it out to me, because, like, what year did that album come out?
2003.
Was it?
Yeah.
I was a kid, and when you're a kid, like, this is a big thing about music, when you're a kid, you don't care about the production or the snare tone, you care about the songs.
Yeah.
And for me, I was listening to, you know, Slipknot and Korn and System and all those bands, and, you know, I was a big Metallica head. But then when I heard Saint Anger from Metallica, I was like, there's, you know, balls to the bloody guitar riffs and the lower tuning and the aggression.
I remember
aggression
hearing an unnamed feeling.
My favourite song off that album.
When it comes in, and like those cymbal catches.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was trying to learn all of those grooves at the time, and then the theatrics and watching the music videos and seeing Lars just be really raw.
Yeah, it's what metal's all about, like real raw aggression, you know.
Having watched those San Diego 92 shows, Seattle 89, the Cunning Stunts DVDs, like the S&M DVD. I think we all had those. We'd talk about those.
On video, actually,
And then to see the Saint Anger music videos.
One in the prison was Saint Anger,
Saint Anger. Like, I loved that breakdown, or not breakdown, the bit right before the verse, just where they let loose and go crazy and everyone's head banging.
Fast
and
double bass.
I love it. Vintage, like, Lars just killing it. So
yeah, I did that album. For me, was actually a standout album growing up. You know, it music's, you know, it doesn't have to be this, you know, we're just after talking about lovely production, but it doesn't just have to be amazing production. You've got to fucking feel it, you know. I don't know, you're gonna have to bleep me if I curse.
You
got
parental advisory.
I've lasted this long, but it's all about the feel, you know. If it's heavy metal or anything like that, it's, you know,
sometimes rawness is good.
It is, yeah. It's like, listen to early Slipknot. There's a reason why people say their early albums are the best. Like, it's raw, because it's real raw aggression. You're feeling those tunes. Same with Alien Weaponry. When you listen to those guys, that's real music coming out of real dudes. You know, Gojira, listen to Mario on drums. That's not a robot. That's a real human being get expressing themselves.
Close,
you know,
to a robot.
Man, I don't even think a robot could keep up with Mario, to be honest.
He's just unbelievable. And when you talk about the rawness, Jason, like you mentioned Slipknot, you think of that intro track of Iowa, 515, was actually Sid. Was it? I think it was Sid or was
Sick?
No, it was,
no, was
Sid, the member of the band.
Oh, sorry.
Having a mental breakdown in the vocal booth.
Was that what it was about?
He actually, that is a sample and chopped of him crying and like absolutely
wouldn't surprise me
losing
with
his shit.
Yeah, that was,
because they said
album.
The album recordings of Iowa was a really dark time for all of them personally.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That was in, yeah.
That was,
I read
2002,
that.
I think, or did it come out in 2002? It would have been 01, 02.
Yeah, around then.
I've seen that album being toured.
Yeah, you were talking about that.
Yeah, I seen that in the RDS.
The RDS in 03.
And I wasn't a big fan of them at the time. I was a huge Metallica fan, but I got to see them, didn't realise it, but like, they just walked past me, heading up on the stage, through like Harris Fencing.
Yeah.
And like, there was people, oh, Joey, and you know, I'm like, who the fuck is that? Oh shit, that's
Slipknot. It's like fucking Arkham Asylum.
But then they got on the stage and they blew my fucking mind.
I'm very jealous. I've never seen Joey live, and he'd honestly be my biggest idol. Like, nobody drums with the kind of aggression, and I felt even the creativity that Joey had, especially from that era. Like,
and the tightness.
Yeah, like, you watch some of those videos live and just watch his featness. It's like, nobody can play like that, you know?
That was the legit lineup I seen then.
Yeah. Because you would have seen Paul Gray, you would have seen Joey.
That was nuts, that. Oh my God.
Jim Root, Mick Thompson.
Right now,
just Mick, fucking hair and the mask.
Yeah,
and
the big fucking black.
It's like the boogeyman. Yeah. Man's going to come and snatch your soul.
There was demonic eyes looking through that mask as well,
But they worked there that day. Anyone remembers, I remember in the audience, like pegging kegs at each other. And like, they were proper nuts then.
But that's who. That's real music to me, you know.
We're talking about raw, and that's raw. Like, that's power. That's just them bashing it out, man. But
they made a
masterpiece out of it, though.
And they made a movement. Like, you know, the Slipknot movement is, you know, even to this day, untouchable. There is nothing in that sort of world like as big as that, you know. And it's because it was raw and real. You know, it wasn't just this piece together perfect thing. You know, and I see that a lot with all sort of music. You got to approach it like that, you know.
For sure. And have you read Corey Taylor's first book?
No, something I should do.
Yeah, there's some really, really good stories in it. And maybe not the best example, but some of the problems that arise in life, you can definitely make good opportunities out of them. And when you talked about real and raw music, what Corey done with all his experiences and bringing it into Slipknot, look what it brought to them.
Yeah. We're lucky to have Corey. Like, how many times did he OD and stuff like that? But
he wasn't the original member either, though. Wasn't he?
Not at the very, very start.
Not at the very beginning.
I remember reading that. Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's such a big point. Actually, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Is like, you know, we obviously see this with all the big stars, but you know, when you're going to see your local favorite band that's up and coming live, it's just like that. You know, not maybe to that extreme, but their own extremes. Definitely, there's that stuff going on in the background, and that's maybe why they're playing music. And you know, that's why I think it's so important to be like supportive of people that are trying music or that they're artists and stuff, because
it's therapy, man, for a lot of people.
That's the best thing about playing drums is, you know, it's not free therapy, but it's good therapy, you know. It's like
music is therapy. I see it all the time. Like, even, you know, different songs, and you almost be like, why do I like even metal lyrics? People like, say people that aren't into metal music, they would say, oh, they're fucking crazy bastards. If you actually listen to the lyrics, man, there's a lot of deep shit in that that a lot of people deal with.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
You know, just maybe they're singing it a different way, but if you break it down, like, even like Kublai Khan, like, Swan Song and stuff like that, yeah. If you actually listen to the lyrics and that, like, it's meaningful, deep shit, like.
And it should be, like, I think it's, your words have got to stand for something, you know.
Yeah, I just feel sometimes people think that, like, metal music is just all rah, 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 like, you know, it's not.
Yeah, a lot of these guys mean what they say.
Absolutely. And that's where the rawness comes from inside them, because yeah. Probably you went through a lot of shit or something, you know?
And then that helps everybody else out in turn, because somebody that is feeling that certain way starts to relate to that music.
100%. The amount of album or bands I've gone to see that, you know, it's been songs I've heard over the years, and, you know, you're teary-eyed standing watching them in the crowd, because just like, you know, it either connected with a part of your life or it helped you understand something about yourself, or, you know.
Definitely.
Exactly when you say that, Jason, I had a funny enough experience of that when we went to see Iron Maiden.
Okay.
It was like, you know, getting teary-eyed listening to Revelations.
Okay.
Because that brings you back to a certain time. You're like, oh, I can remember being a certain place or at a certain moment listening to that song, especially when the clean bit comes in right before the big da-da-da in the chorus. It's like,
music's powerful, man. Like,
it is, and that's why we do what we do, you know. It's like, you know, I think, you know, people, you know, we need music, and musicians need to play it, you know. It's just like, for everybody's sake, you know. It's, and there's, we've so many talented, amazing artists kind of in this country, so it's like, and as a nation, Irish people, I find we're such an amazing creative nation, you know. So,
definitely creative. We have to be one of the most creative.
Yeah, 100%.
Between poetry and music and, you know,
film. Yeah. Even some of the actors that are in this country are just,
go on, Killian.
Go on, Killian.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's crazy, like, you know, there's a lot of stuff you do, because I love to play drums, I love to play metal, but at the same time, it's like, even though you're not singing a song or playing a melody that, you know, maybe evokes emotion, you're playing with emotion and you're playing with energy.
Playing through
it. That portrays, you know, and it's just like, when you're playing live at a show, you can see that connection between people, and that's one of the best things you'll ever get.
Yeah, once you get that bond with the crowd, then, like, it's just everyone's one. Like,
you can't fake being genuine, you can't fake authenticity.
No.
And everything is raw, it's honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you said, this is me pouring my heart and soul into this music, and this is exactly what I want to play on this track.
But then when you see it back from the crowd, like, that's just full circle again. Like, it's,
yeah, some of those moments are real special when you see somebody, like, air drumming along, or, you know, they're following the snare hits, or the, you know, and it's like, or singing the lyrics and stuff, and it's, like, you know, even if you're not the biggest band in the world and somebody sings back your lyrics, it's unbelievable that you've connected with someone, you know. It's,
it's got to be a fucking brilliant feeling.
Well, you've definitely got that headbanging groove going when you play some of those breakdown parts.
Damn right,
on the
China.
It's just like,
Yeah, I love a good breakdown, you know. It's just, there's no better feeling in the world than seeing, you know, a big crowd of people just, you know, crushing down to, and you're getting to smash out your drums as heavy as you can.
Jay Weinberg.
Yeah. Jason Christie.
There we go. Jason, what was the first album you ever bought?
I haven't bought many albums because I had really cool brothers who were metalheads. So I can thank my brother Barry and Kyle for putting me onto the best music. The first albums I remember holding in my hand were, I think, Issues by Korn. A couple of the Korn albums, Slipknot's Subliminal Verses was definitely one of the first albums I remember being, like, in love with.
Yeah.
And then I had, like, a burnt, you know, mixed CD of Metallica's Greatest Hits.
Nice.
And that was just, like, my, you know, go-to every day. Going to school with your Walkman and putting on, you know, your two or three CDs that you've shoved in your pockets. So it would have been probably Metallica's kind of like Ride the Light, Master Puppets era.
Oh, man.
Then Slipknot, Iowa to Volume 3 era. And then, like, System of a Down was a big
Toxicity.
One, you know. Toxicity and, like, Steal This Album.
Oh,
you know.
Man.
I remember being a kid looking through, like, you know, the Slipknot you know, the pages and the booklets and stuff like that, and yeah. seeing all the artwork and the masks, and
who taught you know, that,
that was so cool. Like when you would rip asunder the album
yeah.
and just go through it start to yeah. finish, and you would check the photographs, you would read the lyrics, or even read some of the credits.
Where it was recorded,
yeah, yeah. yeah where it was recorded, maybe some of the labels, who they were signed under, yeah. what the whole thing
especially
was.
Especially with a band like Slipknot, you know, there was such an amazing mystique behind them. It's like they're almost not real, you know. Yeah. It was like, or I couldn't believe it was real. Like, even when I watched the videos, because they're in the masks and the get up, it's just like, can anybody really play like the way Joey was playing or anything yeah. like that? And that was mind-blowing to me as a kid. You know, that's what set me off. I was a metalhead from word go, you know.
Yeah. And I like that we both had a similar influence in being obsessive with the gear from our heroes.
Big time, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like, I'm loving Tam the Drums to this day, a la Lars Ulrich.
Mm. Yeah.
Influence, like Pearl being your thing for a long time, Paisley yeah. especially.
I was big on Pearl, yeah, because Joey obviously with the Pearl kit for so long, and it obviously I play Sonar kit now and a DW snare and stuff like that. It's become now what sounds best for what yeah. I'm playing. But yeah, in those days I was obsessed with, like, I just wanted to have Joey set up. Like, I have the Joey snare at home. I would do anything, if there's anybody out there who has a signature Joey kit, give me one or sell me one. I would do anything to have a replica of his old kit.
I take
you know?
It Joey's your favorite drummer.
Yeah, definitely. He definitely had the most impact on me. Like, I never want to play like him. And I don't tend to try learn a lot of Slipknot songs, but I just, the way he approaches it and the way he played for me is so inspiring. You know, it's
full of energy.
Him, yeah. Lars is a huge one. You know, there's no one bigger in life on stage than Lars, you know, playing drums. He's a front man and himself behind that drum kit, you know. And but... You know, my favorite drummer changes all the time, like Matt from Periphery, Matt Halpern. He's
killer drummer.
Kind of the last few years, he's been the big one for me. And, you know, there's just so many cool killer drummers that come out of the scene. Like, before I came
Mario.
To, yeah, like Gojira was, I suppose they're going so long, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember hearing The Art of Dying for the first time. And
oh,
I was like,
man.
Oh my God. Like, weird polyrhythms and, yeah. you know, that... Big Bell ride he'd play on.
Mega Bell.
He has such an energy on the stage as well.
He does, yeah.
Talk
yeah.
about Lars being a front man. Like, Mario was like a front man.
He is, yeah. And yeah. that's maybe key here. Same with Joey or any of them, or like Mike Portnoy or any of those guys. Like, they're big characters. And it's like, that inspired me a lot for drums, because I'm no front man. I'm not a guy to stand up and, you know, be a singer. I love playing guitar, but, you know, for me, I'm at home behind the drum kit. You know, it's a very powerful place to be. And especially when you see these guys like Joey, he wasn't a big dude, kind of like myself, you know, but he came across as this huge thing, you know,
man.
He was an unstoppable force. Yeah, exactly. And
remember he came out and was it Download Festival and played with Metallica?
He did when Lars him, was sick, him and Dave Lombardo.
If you drop it a hat, just bang, no problem.
They were like scouring backstage looking for someone to play.
I love that story so much. Clown tells an amazing perspective of it, where he wasn't allowed. They did a little practice jam before in a trailer thing.
Room.
Yeah, and Clown wasn't allowed in, but he said he sat outside. And it's just that moment for Joey. It's like what I aspire. It's like when your favorite artist or something someday comes along. It's just like, we don't have a drummer, and he got to go into the room and jam those songs. And Clown talks about what it's like hearing him play those songs and the pride he had in him doing that. You know, it's such a you know, amazing thing. And for a drummer like Joey, he's played the biggest gigs, sold out the biggest shows. But, you know, even for him, that was like, you know, playing Metallica is just the pinnacle.
Didn't
of
half
drum.
A set, was it?
They both played half the set each.
The Sound Tech played some of the songs
I
too,
think
didn't
you're
they?
Right.
Yeah.
Did
he?
Yeah.
There's not as much footage around that.
Oh, okay. I've seen that.
One of my favorite things of Joey is when he played with Korn. I think it's a Download as well.
I didn't actually see that. I wasn't aware.
It is amazing.
I must check it out.
I'm going to send you a video later. I think it's
Do for sure.
Blind they play. But at the end of the song, he goes into this like Slipknot, double bassy, big, you know, crescendo for the ending. And it's just the sickest thing. Like, I love Korn so much. And then Joey with Korn and they ramped it up for the live. So that's one of my favorite.
I'm sure you remember that video on YouTube. It was one of the only ones at the time, 10-15 years ago, and we would have been going down that YouTube rabbit hole of Joey in the studio.
Oh, and the green Pearl Masters kit. Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's like on the way in the truck, and it's rain and cats and dogs in Iowa, and then he gets in and he just starts.
He just sits down and blast beats like I've never seen anybody blast and it like straight away into his double bass, and yeah, that's. He just primed. I'd say that guy who was 24/7 could do that. You know?
Oh, man.
He's got to be one of the best there ever was. Like, he's got to be up there.
Definitely. And he definitely inspired a huge generation of drummers. Like, there's every drummer I see has a little bit of Joe, you know, or, you know, definitely there's a little bit inspired by him, you know.
Yeah. So back to your own project.
What's on the horizon next?
What's on the horizon?
Gigs. So we have a load of shows coming up, you know, kind of through the year, and you're always kind of on the look for that next big show you can possibly play. So we have a couple of gigs around the country. We're still enjoying kind of playing this album, Cut Through Culture, to people. You know, it's out a year now, but I still think there's, you know, more people we can push it to. But we are starting to write and everything now. So we were always writing. It's kind of the rule, always have the phone record and always be jotting down ideas. And we're coming to the point now where there's songs been built and stuff like that. So it's kind of do a few more gigs and start making that path towards probably the next album or the next singles, you know. I think that's where we're at the moment. Hopefully another big show or two like last year. You know,
definitely.
We got to end last year supporting the Trey, you know. So I hope we can end this year on the same sort of high as that, you know.
Hopefully so, man. Hopefully so.
Have you any festival news for the summer?
I wish.
Anything.
Hopefully, but not at the moment.
No. Nothing that can be spoke of just yet.
Yeah, no. You'll be the first to know. I'll give you the demo.
Give us the... We'll finish up with a few questions, will we, Luke?
Yeah, I actually want to get back to one thing just to ask a couple of nerdy tech questions about.
We haven't nerded out too much, so go on.
What rig or what was your setup in Italy for recording that first album?
A really different rig to what I've ever used. It was a Yamaha Recording Custom, so beautiful. I was using UFIP cymbals. They're an Italian brand.
Yeah.
And they're very strange cymbals. If you listen to that album, the Chinatone, I love. It was this like 22 or 24 inch really raw China. So it sounded like a shotgun going off. And then the Recording Custom, I think we used a Mapex Black Panther steel snare of some sort. It was one of the Panther ranges, I think. That was an amazing studio, you know, like high-end studio, amazing engineer, Johnny Mazdeo. I'm going to say his name wrong because he's Italian. The Grid Europe. That was a beautiful setup. And then I suppose I can tell you the Pyres. One was my own personal kit, the Sonar kit. Yeah, so it's a Sonar Maple kit. We use a mixture of cymbals for that one. We tried out lots of different cymbals. I used a couple of the Istanbul cymbals at the time that the producer had, and then my own, a lot of Meinl setups and stuff. And we used the Joey snare for that album, which I loved.
It's a fabulous snare.
It was a big thing for me.
Was steel really cuts as well?
It does, and like there's just that slightly higher tuned, you know, snap out of
that
it.
That cranked sound out.
But if you tune it right, you can still get a real fat produced sound snare drum. That was the main one for it.
Nice.
But yeah, it was a joy doing the one in Italy. The Yamaha Recording Custom was a proper old school kit, you know. That's what you see all the big wig artists playing on in the studios,
so
you know.
So many studio stalwarts that use Yamaha Recording Customs and still do to this day.
I get it. Like, when I seen it, I was kind of like, that's a, you know, it looks like a, that's not a metal drum kit, you know, but as soon as you start playing, you're like, yeah, it just sounds phenomenal. And the drum tone on the album is very cool, you know.
It's cool for sure, man. Absolutely class.
It's tough. Right then, we'll finish up with a few questions. Your first and last gig.
First and last gig. So first gig was in Carton Cross, hometown.
No, the first gig you went to.
Oh, first gig I went to. Mm. Oh, okay. Metallica. Oh. Metallica in Marley Park with Tenacious D opened.
Yeah. No way. That was my first gig as well. August 20th, 2008.
On my birthday. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
The three of us were at that.
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, that was my first, like, you know, I'd probably seen some pub bands or something, but yeah,
then Tenacious D.
Yeah, I just got in for Tenacious D. I think they were playing Kickapoo when I walked in, you know. And then obviously Metallica, that was amazing, you know, proper like sealed the deal for me as a metalhead and you know, wanting to be a drummer. I remember
kick drum.
Lars's kick drum.
I had palpitations for the first time.
Me too. I looked at my brother and was like, am I going to be okay? You know, and I was just like, this is what live music is. You know, I can feel it in my chest. And those, like, I was 11 years old for that show, or right in around that age. And there was a mosh pit broke out and I got like an elbow to the face and everything. And I was just like, you know, this is my first time seeing mosh pits kick off. And
I will never forget that gig. Until the day I leave this earth.
Yeah, same as.
When the Ecstasy Gold had hit.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
And everything was happening. And then you see the little man from Denmark stand up behind the kid with his hands in the air and the roar of the crowd.
Yeah.
And that China to go 1, 2, 3, 4. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Creeping Death. And every time I hear Creeping Death, when you talked about the power that music has to transport you back to a moment
right back
in
to
time,
that moment,
that's, I feel like that 10-year-old kid again.
Yeah.
Just watching that in the crowd, being mesmerized and Hetfield like God Almighty up on the stage, waiting for that riff to kick in.
Yeah.
And then the crowd broke loose, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, that was definitely sealed the deal for me. Like, that gig has inspired me to this day, especially like that bass drum. I strive to be the, you know, to playing that bass drum.
And they played so what at that gig?
They did.
They did
at the end, wasn't it? Towards the end.
The standout moment for me at that gig was Nothing Else Matters, because obviously everybody knows Nothing Else Matters. It was one of the first songs I even attempted on drums, probably a couple of years just after that. The rain just started, it had just gone dark, and Nothing Else Matters come in. Yeah. And hearing, I don't know how many people were there for in Marley Park, but hearing that many people sing along to a tune, it's just like, that was mind blowing.
Creeping Death was definitely the moment for me, but after that, One has always
held
a special place in my heart.
Especially when you hear the you know, the explosions and the gunfire going off, and then that riff coming in.
And I remember just having gone to the bathroom. And my dad wanted to beat the traffic. And was like, you know, it's the last few songs. We'll stay at the back and leave early. He was like, no, we won't. And I remember standing just watching the whole pyro show. And then those opening notes, when they just bring it in off the, you know, the hang.
A wee bit.
And it's like waiting. And then the opening notes ring in. You're just like, oh my God.
Slaying Castle was good too.
It was incredible.
That was, and it's what a beautiful day. I think that was one of the best metalhead days out ever. You know, sunny weather, everybody out in the big field,
we
got Metallica,
so
you know.
That was
got the gold circle.
Perfect day.
That was the perfect day, like, Metallica are the greatest for a reason, you know. I think they are always and should be the biggest band in the world because they, you know, they don't even need the biggest production. It's just that the songs, the crowd, everything about seeing Metallica
is production. Well, not all production now, but their tour now is a production.
Yeah, for sure. But you give those guys just their amps and a drum kit.
Yeah, and they kill
it. Still bang it.
Like, you know, justice for Lars as always. I think nobody can talk good enough about Lars. Who at that age can go up and rip it every night like that, dude? Like, every night, killing it.
Two gigs in a weekend. Like,
two gigs in a weekend at 60.
And they're playing, like, two-hour sets, like, at least probably most of the time,
At least 2 hours, if not a wee bit more.
And, like, you know, it's just a testament to them.
Have you seen some of the videos lately? That video of him playing Leper Messiah at Donington last year.
It's crazy.
It's like, you know, everyone who shits on him, all those guys out there in the comments.
Take note.
Challenge you to play it like that.
Grandpa Lars can rip it, you know?
Definitely.
It's hard as fuck.
He does, yeah. He is one of the greats. And, like, you know, I don't think we'd have most of the people we think are great if it wasn't for Lars as well.
He definitely influenced an awful lot of people.
Everybody,
If there was no Lars Ulrich, I would not be playing drums.
Yeah, probably same, yeah. So last gig I was at was the other night. I went to see Enter Shikari.
Yeah,
it was a last second kind of whim because I put up an extra date, and I've always liked them, you know. But me, my guitar player Shane, and my younger sister went up to the show, so it was a really cool night. Just, you know, up, have a beer, enjoy them. The last gig I went to that I was really planning on going to was Tesseract.
Okay.
So one of my, if you love amazing drummers. Jay from Tesseract is phenomenal, you know. He's Tesseract, the band, one of my favorites, you know. It's just that nice mixture of, it's like, it's proggy, but it's melodic, it's technical, it's heavy, it's melodic, you know. It's got everything for me. So I seen them recently, and they were just, you know, mind blown. I've seen them a couple of times now. I stood watching the drummer for the whole show. He's one of those guys, you can't take your eyes off. The Academy as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was my last one.
If you could play in any band, who would it be?
That's a hard question. Architects. I would pick Architects. Because it's just... since I've been going towards the Burn, they were probably like the band that's been like my drive in the background since I've been a musician, you know, and started getting going and having better shows and whatnot. I've been in love with Architects for years now and seen them many times, and they were the bands I was kind of like listening to when I was on tour and getting inspired for writing stuff. And before gigs, that's what get me pumped up. So I would love the experience to play with Architects. I've seen them, you know, support Biffy in Ireland there last year. I seen them headline Ali Pali over in London. I seen them up in Scotland, you know. Cool. And it's just, they were supporting Metallica on their last tour. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, they're going to be one of the greats, I think, you know, as the years go on.
Okay. But, brilliant band. Really good.
Last question for me then is, if you could get four people into a room to record an album, who would they be?
Say
drums, vocals, guitar, bass.
Vocals, I'm going to go with Jonathan Davis, Korn. One of my favourite vocalists of all time. Yeah. A hard pick between him and maybe the Mudvayne singer. I love them both. But I go with Jonathan Davis. He's one of my idols. Bass player, I would have to go with Justin from Tool.
Oh yeah,
because he's just, I don't know if you've seen him on the last tour, but Justin just rips it, you know. I've never seen a guy move like that on stage.
Unbelievable.
Guitar player, that's a hard one.
So many.
Yeah, James Hetfield. Yeah. he's the most badass guitar player there is. Him in that right hand. And then he gets to do backup vocals. Yes. So if you had Jonathan and James in the same room, I would be I'd be like a little schoolgirl. And then drums, got to be me because I want to be in that room.
Nice, I like
can't
that
beat
answer.
That, yeah, I like that.
I am playing in with that band.
Yeah, I like that.
Good answer, good.
Bit
answer.
Of a weird mix mash, but we'd write something.
Yeah.
Well, before we finish up, Jason, if you can tell us what that sound is for you, your most favourite drum sound, or most preferred drum sound, or when you think of that sound, the perfect sound, or
it's got to go to Matt Halpern with his Periphery stuff. I think he's captured that modern production as well as bringing back live drums. You know, drums for so long were very, especially in the metal world, I find, or metalcore world, were very oversampled, and a lot of people using the same sample packs, which is not bad. Like, it suits the music, it suits the production. But I definitely started to miss that feel of hearing a real drum kit in a big reverb-y cool room. And Matt Halpern and the bass player, his name slips my mind, from Periphery, producing it in his studio. I think they have the best drum tones going. Like, and they produced, Nolly is the producer.
Yes, yeah.
They produced the last Architects drum tones. And so the Periphery, Matt Halpern's and Dan's from Architects, I think that is one of the best modern tones for me. If you go old school tones, it's probably got to be the Black Album. There's no better drum tone out there. You know, that is the drum tone for
the
me.
The God That Failed, that heaviness is just... I think of that intro and that snare smacking.
Yeah, and like that perfect reverb, you know, it's just, that is the drum tone. If you could play that, you know, you'd be a happy dude.
Cool.
Yeah, so that'd be my two. You get two.
Good answer, man. Good answer. Man,
unbelievable. Well, Jason, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Yeah,
pleasure absolutely. To be here.
We wish you all the best for this year, and hopefully we'll have
hopefully
you back
catch you on the
again.
Road.
Yeah, thanks. I'm looking forward to listening to a few more of your podcasts. Yeah, a few exciting people coming on, so I'll definitely be listening in.
Cool, man.
Thanks for having me.
No problem, man.
Thanks, Jason.
That's all for this week on That Sound Podcast. it was absolutely class to have such an insightful conversation with Jason.
Yeah, gentleman. He was pure honesty in the chat.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah. Like, you know, from when he was at school to having the dream of being a professional musician from day one, finishes his leaving cert, within a couple of months he's in Italy recording in a proper studio.
A real professional setup with a brilliant producer by the sounds of things who gave him some really good knowledge.
Definitely.
And helped him on his journey to become a better musician.
Yeah, and by jizz, he is a good musician.
Oh man, can he play those drums.
Yeah, that double bass, man.
Some of the parts in that new album are just...
Yeah. If you're just looking to open, you know, your encyclopedia up again to add a few more pages to it, check out Words That Born. You will not be disappointed. And they have some gigs coming up as well. We'll attach them to our socials. Again, thanks to Jason. Really, really enjoyed that one.
Was incredible to hear him talk about his journey.
Yeah.
As you said, from a school kid or just an avid music listener.
Mm-hmm.
Who wanted to play drums and he wanted to
just
do
loves
this for
music.
Loves music and wanted to do it for a living and really manifest in those visions.
No, he was a gentleman. I really, really enjoyed that one. Again, if you're enjoying our podcast, what can really help us out is if you tell a friend about the podcast, like the podcast, maybe leave a review or rate the podcast, little things like that. That takes 5-10 seconds can really help us out to get our podcast into other people's algorithms and maybe catch new listeners. Thanks for listening and catch you on the next one.
Catch you next week.